Welcome to the Cyber Law and Business Report. Get the top story on the hot-button internet legal topics of the day. This is your home for the latest on internet law and policy. Hear the latest net trends impacting business and have your questions answered right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Now, please welcome your host, the founder of the Internet Law Center, Bennett Kelly.
Good morning. This is Bennett Kelly broadcasting live from the Internet Law Center here in the downtown Santa Monica in the heart of Silicon Beach. Please be seated. We have a great show. We're here in Los Angeles. We're enjoying an Irish invasion. U2 was in town for a couple of shows here at the Forum. Saw them last night. Great show. They're great showmen. And continuing on the Irish theme, Irishman turned 007, Pierce Brosnan, turned 65. So he'll be getting his Medicare card up at his house in Malibu. So happy birthday, Pierce Brosnan. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. We have a lot of things going on the internet. There's actually going to be a vote on net neutrality in the Senate today. And it's a vote to basically reversed the decision of the FCC and reinstate the old rule that had been imposed by the Obama administration. That's going to take place sometime today, so momentous day. But today we're going to be talking about an interesting subject that largely unnoticed that's quickly getting a lot of attention and steam as the May 25th deadline for EU's GDPR, their new privacy laws that go into effect on May 25th, and its impact on ICANN's WHOIS regime. And with us, we have Tyler Marindola, who's going to explain to us really what is happening and what this means, because it can have, there's some great alarm that this may impact actually the overall cybersecurity of the web. And so this little discussed issue actually could have quite a big impact. So Tyler, you're with us.
Thanks for having me, Bennett.
And Tyler is calling in from Philadelphia, regrettably home of the World Super Bowl champions.
Not regrettably at all.
Any event, Tyler, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I am an intellectual property litigator with Ballard Spahr here in Philadelphia. We have offices in a few different places in the country, including L.A. And I do mostly, at the moment, patent litigation and trademark and copyright litigation. But my practice also includes internet law issues, UDRP proceedings, and other kind of domain name enforcement and trademark enforcement.
So Tyler came on my radar screen because he co-authored an article, GDPR and the Future of WHOIS Data. And Tyler's background, as well as a link to that article and some background on the ICANN WHOIS, is available on our show notes, which are available at cyberlawradio.wordpress.com. And as usual, you can also follow us on Twitter at cyberlawradio. So Tyler, walk us through what's going on with respect to the GDPR and WHOIS. I guess maybe let's start off with what exactly is the WHOIS system?
Sure. So whenever anybody registers a domain name, whether it's a .com, a .net, any of the other generic top-level domains, or a country code domain, you're required to provide certain information about you, the registrant. That includes your name, your address, email address, phone number, and also technical and administrative contacts. The WHOIS database is a database in which that information is published. And at least for the time being, up until May 25th, that information is generally available to the public. And it's not a single database, but it's searchable. And so anyone who's interested in who's behind a particular domain name can go to a WHOIS search, can type in the domain name, and can get back a report that includes the registrant's name, address, email address. And generally speaking, that will then allow you to contact them. There are ways that registrants can mask their real name and address, whether it's through a proxy service, or a lot of registrars who you register the domain names with also provide that service either for a fee or free of charge But generally speaking, unless you're using that service, your information is publicly available.
Are you there?
Yes.
So when ICANN set up Whois, they listed several reasons why it was being done. And one was to have a reliable mechanism for identifying and contacting the registrant, providing reasonably accurate and up-to-date information about the technical and administrative points of contact, administering the domain, and supporting a framework to address issues involving domain name registration, including but not limited to consumer protection, investigation of cybercrime, DNS abuse, and intellectual property protection, and last, providing a framework to address appropriate law enforcement needs. And so, you know, these are very valuable things. And it has also been used a lot for as a tool for people in the cybersecurity field. Can you explain that?
That's right. So when malware is distributed or when folks engage in phishing schemes, one of the most powerful tools that cybersecurity researchers have to kind of track down the, generally speaking, voluminous number of domain names that these folks use for these schemes is Whois data. And now, oftentimes, cyber criminals aren't providing accurate kind of names or addresses, but there are still oftentimes embedded in those Whois reports information that can be used to track down whoever is distributing malware or whoever is engaged in these schemes. One of the most powerful, actually, is the registrant's email address, because an email address, unlike some other information, is harder to fake. It has to be verified by the registrar, and it's often even cyber criminals will use a similar email address across multiple domains, and that allows you to find other domains that the same that have been registered by the same email address. That's called a reverse Whois search, which, as we'll, I think, discuss later in the show, is going to become much harder under any proposed model for complying with the General Data Protection Regulation. So it's important for cybersecurity resources. You mentioned law enforcement, who have a big stake in the availability of Whois data. The U.S. government in particular has been very outspoken about the importance of having email addresses show up in Whois reports. You and I are probably very familiar with intellectual property holders who
yes.
use Whois to track down folks who are infringing trademarks or who are cyber squatting. And then it would be important to mention that it's not all good. Whois data is also used by spammers or cyber criminals who can target domain name holders based on this data. Spammers in particular can kind of scrape Whois data and use that to send out mass mailings and those sort of what I guess we would call abusive communications.
Right. And we had a show a few years back on this topic when ICANN was trying to, I guess, strengthen the Whois system by requiring verification of the data. And there was some pushback over privacy issues, and particularly in concern of one of the arguments raised was the use of spamming. But now a new privacy issue has emerged, and that's GDPR. Can you explain how GDPR relates to the Whois situation?
Sure. So GDPR, it stands for the General Data Protection Regulation. It's an EU regulation that's going to replace their current data protection regime. And it'll apply pretty broadly to anyone who either any data controller or data processor, that is basically anyone who has or uses personally identifiable information. It'll apply to data controllers and processors who are either based in the European Union or who are based elsewhere, but control or process the data of EU citizens. And the GDPR implements a lot of new protections. Some of the more, I guess, newsworthy and the ones that have gotten the most press, we've mentioned that this issue actually hasn't gotten a ton of press, but some of the ones that have gotten more press include the so-called right to be forgotten, data portability, which is if somebody has your data, they, you have to be able to contact them and tell them to give it to a different service provider. And there are new requirements and enhanced requirements for consent. Now, the reason that this applies to who is that registrars, registries, and very likely ICANN will be considered data controllers under the GDPR because they collect a good amount of information, personally identifiable information from registrants, and then they make them public so that people can see it. Currently, the mechanism for making this information public is consent. The registrars all have contracts with ICANN, as do the registries, that require them to collect this what is called thick WHOIS data, addresses, emails, phone numbers from registrants. And the contracts require the registrars to get registrant consent for publishing this data in the WHOIS database. GDPR essentially takes away the current consent regime for making WHOIS data public. Under GDPR, consents have to be freely given. They have to be specific, which means specific to the purpose for which data is used, and they have to be unambiguous. On top of that, a data subject has to have the option to withdraw their consent without detriment, to decline consent without detriment, and when they choose to withdraw their consent, it has to be as simple to withdraw it as it was to give it. That likely means that the consents that are embedded in these registrant contracts are not going to be compliant with GDPR, almost certainly. Now, registrars are not required to use any particular language, so we don't really know exactly what language is in a lot of these agreements. But it's a pretty consensus view, and it's consistent with the legal advice that ICANN received back in October.
And when the EU GDPR goes into effect on May 25th, but it was passed, I believe, was it 2016?
That's right.
What was ICANN's response when it was passed in 2016?
So ICANN's response was, at the time, or I should say ICANN has been a bit slow to really pick up on this issue, and they've recognized that. It wasn't actually until 2017, I think, that ICANN actually started to get legal opinions about how GDPR would affect the WHOIS database. And they, since then, they've started to put in compliance models. But ICANN's initial response was pretty muted, and they've since recognized that they did not do enough early on to address. Because GDPR actually, while it's been, it was passed 3 years ago, it was proposed, I think, back in 2012. You may know if that's right or not.
I don't have that in front of me, but yeah, but I guess what I was getting at is, ICANN first started getting on the ball on this issue in some point in 2017, right?
That's right.
And so they conclude, ICANN concludes, this is more than a theoretical threat to the WHOIS system. So what did they do in response?
So ICANN, after receiving legal opinion and input from their stakeholders, ICANN's tried to develop a handful of different models for potentially dealing with what WHOIS will look like come May 25th. The first real attempt at this was in January 12, when ICANN proposed three different models. All of them required still the collection of thick WHOIS data from registrants, and ICANN has had that as a consistent part of their compliance model. So hopefully thick data will continue to be collected. But the different models, you may remember, differed both in what amount of data was accessible to the public. It went from essentially no public WHOIS data to essentially everything except a registrant name for a natural person. And then the real controversy has surrounded who is going to be entitled to access non-public WHOIS information.
Right.
It's been recognized at this point that WHOIS, with respect to the GDPR, WHOIS will not exist as it has existed up to May 25th after that date. And so there's been a number of proposals about how to deal with the non-public data and who will get access to it. In ICANN's January models, there were basically three approaches to that. The first was self-certification. We should probably talk in I guess a little bit of detail about one of the justifications for data processing under the GDPR, which is a legitimate interest. And under ICANN's first model, a third party would be allowed to self-certify that they had a legitimate interest to get access to full WHOIS data, and then they would receive that access. The second model, and it looks like this is where things are going to end up at the end of the day, although, as we'll discuss, we don't really know when, was a more formal certification program where there would be some pre-established criteria, and third parties would be able to go to whoever's doing the accreditation, that's not decided yet either, show that they met the requirements, either they were a member of law enforcement, they represented intellectual property holders, they were cybersecurity researchers or employees. And under that accreditation program, they could obtain access to the thick WHOIS data once they were approved. The third and most restrictive was you'd have to get a court order. Essentially, either you'd have to have an order from either a data protection authority or from a judicial tribunal.
And this is definitely not what ICANN originally intended for WHOIS. And so, how effective would these mechanisms be if they were approved?
The tiered access mechanisms.
Yeah.
It's really not clear, only because the process was started so late, it seems, that the accreditation model is not fleshed out in great detail yet. That was actually just 2 days ago that ICANN proposed a temporary specification for WHOIS, which would include ultimately very little actual data in public WHOIS. It would have an organization name, and it would have a state or province, but other information, you'd have to essentially seek it through the registrars themselves by either sending a letter that establishes a legitimate interest or getting a court order and presenting it to them. The accreditation model is still very much up in the air, and it's unclear how well it would work or when actually it's even going to be ready to be put in place.
So ICANN decides things somewhat collectively through its stakeholder model of governance. And they had a meeting in March in Puerto Rico, in San Juan, to address these various proposals. And what was the result?
So the proposal at the time on March 8, to continue kind of with our discussion of the accreditation model, imagined what I think was to date kind of the most fleshed out proposal, which was the Governmental Advisory Committee, which is a committee that advises ICANN. It's one of the, as you mentioned, many stakeholders that ICANN has. The Governmental Advisory Committee would administer the accreditation program, would come up with the standards, and then would require compliance. After the meeting in San Juan, which from, I guess, those of us who were hoping for an accreditation model prior to May 25th, did not go very well, the Governmental Advisory Committee came out very quickly and said, we don't view ourselves as having an operational role in this accreditation model that you envision. So right out of the gate, they effectively torpedoed that part of the proposal. And since then, it's been kind of a rush for ICANN to develop alternatives before the May 25th deadline. ICANN has... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, we have a rush for another deadline. We have to take our first break, but we come back. We'll learn more about what ICANN is doing post-San Juan after these messages. You're listening to CyberLaw and Business Report only at webmasterradio.fm.
Stay tuned for more of the CyberLaw and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
AM Days 2018 comes to Las Vegas, May 16th and 17th. Register now at amdays.com. Make the most of your performance marketing with help from some of the most iconic brands, including Microsoft, Capital One, Uber, Backcountry, and many more. AM Days 2018 brings together a powerhouse of industry leaders and dealmakers to network and share insights on the latest practices and cutting-edge updates in performance marketing and more. Make plans to be in Las Vegas for a landmark 10th event. AM Days 2018 Las Vegas, May 16th and 17th. Webmaster Radio listeners can save 20% on two-day and combo passes using promo code WMR20. Register now at amdays.com.
The Web Marketing Association is now accepting entries for the 2018 International Web Award Competition. Web Marketing Award winners receive an image plaque, certificate of achievement, higher visibility for your company, valuable feedback from our expert judges, and links to your site from the highly ranked Web Award site. Visit www.webaward.org to nominate your company, site, or organization. Deadline for entries is May 31st, 2018. Go to www.webaward.org and sign up today.
All of your favorite WebmasterRadio.fm programs on air and on demand 24/7. Find our shows on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Stitcher, and anywhere you download your podcasts. Add some podcasts to your playlist as part of a better profit margin. More refreshing talk radio on air and on demand 24/7. Only on WebmasterRadio.fm. We're everywhere.
Podcasting at the speed of sound.
WebmasterRadio.fm. The flamethrower.
WebmasterRadio.fm. We're everywhere.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And we're back, and we're talking to Tyler Mirandola about the ICANN, who is quandary in the post-GDPR world. And before the break, we were basically talking about ICANN's March meeting in San Juan, and apparently those who depend upon who is, all they got was a T-shirt. And so let's talk about the post-San Juan efforts to try to address this situation. And I think the first was, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't there some failed effort by ICANN just to say, come on, guys, go easy on us. Give us a little time to get our stuff together.
Well, that's right. So at the San Juan meeting, one of the thoughts that started to get floated around was a moratorium on enforcement by the data protection authorities. The thinking being, this is a really complicated issue. GDPR compliance is difficult. It's expensive. ICANN administers or has under its umbrella, I think, over 2,500 registrars and registries, which range from, you know, incredibly sophisticated to really what you'd call almost mom and pop small businesses. And so ICANN's view was, we're making a concerted effort to comply, to come up with a model that both serves our purpose of providing access to this information as needed and for legitimate reasons, and also protects the privacy of registrants. So perhaps we could get some forbearance from the data protection authorities. The reason being the GDPR, one of its innovations as compared to the current privacy law, is that fines for non-compliance can be extremely high, up to 20 million euros or 4% of global turnover, whichever is higher. And so ICANN sought both guidance from what's called the Article 29 Working Party, which as of May 25th will be the Data Protection Board. It's a collection of governments and, or governmental data protection authorities, and also sought some assurances that if ICANN was still in the process of complying as of May 25th, which they surely will be, that they would have some reasonable amount of time to implement a solution that complied with GDPR. The response has not been promising, at least on the moratorium part. So far, the Article 29 Working Party has said there is simply no ability under GDPR for us to give you a moratorium on enforcement. This is a fundamental right of European citizens, and we can't make exceptions to it for individual organizations.
Right. No hall pass on this one. And now, right. Another party voicing objections to this current situation was the White House Cybersecurity Coordinator, Rob Joyce. And he indicated that he shares the concerns, ICANN's concerns over GDPR, and they were actively attempting to push back and fix or create a carve-out in the regulations for GDPR with the EU. And that appears unsuccessful. Am I correct?
You are correct. And I did mention earlier that cybersecurity folks are very concerned about GDPR because it makes it very difficult to identify folks who are potential bad actors who are behind websites. It also makes it much harder to kind of work across domain names to find patterns and schemes that are often so important to stopping cyber threats. The U.S. government in particular has been very consistently strong in their view that anonymized email addresses, which is what the current proposal looks like it will be, anonymized registrant email addresses for the purpose of contacting the registrant, harm the ability of cybersecurity workers to do their job. And the hang-up under the GDPR is that email addresses, I know, for example, my law firm email address, which is my last name and my first initial, is an easy way. It contains what would be considered personally identifiable information under the GDPR. It's my last name. The fear under GDPR is that email addresses will be personally identifiable information. The counterpoint to that, and the one that the U.S. government has pushed, is that there's nothing that requires a registrant to provide an email address that contains personally identifiable information. Anyone can come up with, a fanciful email address or something that has nothing to do with their actual identity.
Right.
The Article 29 Working Party was in their response to ICANN on, I think it was April 11th, asking for guidance, came down very plainly on the other side. They appeared to like the suggestion for anonymized email addresses, and they seemed very much not to like the proposal from some ICANN stakeholders, the arguments from some ICANN stakeholders that email addresses should not be considered personal information under GDPR, and that they should be published. The other part is that often the argument is publishing an email address serves the legitimate purpose of helping to contact the registrant and to map patterns of domain name use by the same registrant. So far, the Article 29 Working Party and the data protection authorities seem unmoved by those arguments.
Now, while they may be unmoved by the arguments, the person making the argument, Rob Joyce, is no longer the White House Cybersecurity Coordinator. And in fact, this week, the White House announced they were eliminating the whole position of Cybersecurity Coordinator, which just seems inexplicable. I saw one commentator note that it's like, eliminating the Navy after Pearl Harbor. And I don't know if you have any reaction to the elimination of that position.
I thought the same thing, which is that it just seems like a very, it seems like a very strange time to eliminate what is becoming a more and more crucial position at a time when, you know, the GDPR coming into effect on May 25th will require every data controller or data processor to have someone who is responsible for data protection. You know, the U.S. government is eliminating the person who is responsible for coordinating cybersecurity across the U.S. government. It's a very strange, I guess, dichotomy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just puzzling. So we have a situation now where because there's no apparent agreement, what is going to happen on May 25th?
So it is still a bit up in the air in the sense that registrars or registries who are based in the EU or who process a good amount of EU data may choose to do their own thing and feel like they have to comply regardless of what their contract with ICANN says. But ICANN just this week put out their temporary specification that purports to, if it is approved by ICANN, purports to give registrars and registries a kind of roadmap for complying with GDPR and complying with ICANN's contracts. I mentioned this a little bit earlier. The result would be that the vast majority of fields that we currently see when we pull up a WHOIS report, registrant name, registrant email address, registrant address, registrant phone number, will all, along with the administrative and technical contacts, will be filled with instead the phrase redacted for privacy. What will be still public is, you know, an organization name to the extent there is one and a state or province. So that'll provide some limited information to the public who are making these searches. The other point here is that ICANN has said that registrars must provide an anonymized email address or a web form that will actually allow someone to contact the registrant. It's not clear kind of from the side of the person sending the email whether there's any way to know whether the registrant actually got it.
Right.
And there's certainly no way to do a reverse WHOIS search based on an anonymized email address. It doesn't seem like there will be one. My understanding is there's no proposal at the moment to make, say, an anonymized email address that matches to a particular registrant. I think that would be its own problem. And also, I think there's a question of how much an anonymized email address really serves the purpose of kind of cutting down on spam or other abusive communications if all the registrar is doing is kind of mechanically forwarding those things to the registrant. But that's kind of what we can expect as of May 25th, and the registrars will hopefully be in a position where they're required to respond to requests for information that are based on what will be legitimate purposes under the GDPR.
And what does that mean then for, it was, for example, your practice? You know, how is that going to affect your practice?
So for me, the primary use that I make of WHOIS is when I'm aware of what I think are infringements or domain name squatting. The first thing you do is, at least when these are on the internet, is you go to the WHOIS database, you see who registered the domain, if that information is available, what their contact email is, where they're based. And the next thing you do is you use a reverse WHOIS search to find other domain names that person has registered. Oftentimes, for example, if someone sets up a website that sells infringing products, they have some other website that sells the same infringing products or that uses the same infringing marks. WHOIS is really the best and the fastest and the most efficient way to get that information. Without it, it's going to be much harder. There are potentially ways to use the website itself, to use IP addresses to identify folks. Other more onerous options that you might be a little bit familiar with are court orders, but those are obviously much make the process of enforcing a client's rights much more expensive and burdensome.
Right. I mean, you have to. I mean, everyone says, "Well, you can get a court order." Well, you have to file a lawsuit, and
that's right.
You don't just file a lawsuit randomly. You know, there's certain ethical standards, and you have to have a certain amount of evidence to move forward with a lawsuit, and then you have to subpoena. I mean, it's and there are a lot of costs to get to that point when you're just trying to investigate whether or not your client has been harmed. And this gives you very few answers.
That's right. And oftentimes, I'm sure you're familiar with this, infringements can be resolved without lawsuits.
Right.
I'd say the vast majority of infringing activity that we resolve is resolved without a lawsuit, either by letter or by an investigation that reveals, in fact, this is a licensee of the client's mark, for example, or this is a licensee of this domain name. That's not going to be possible, or at least it's going to be much more difficult with the restricted whoIs that we're going to see come March 25th, or May 25th, excuse me.
And if you follow someone like Brian Krebs at Krebs on Security, who's been really sounding on the alarm on this issue, what might be the implications for cybersecurity?
Sure. I actually think they're much more grave for cybersecurity. It's certainly going to make my job harder. I think if you read Brian Krebs, it's going to make certain cybersecurity functions impossible. The reverse whois, which relies on historical domain name registration data, is an incredibly important tool for researchers who need to identify domain names that are all registered by a particular person or organization, because oftentimes these phishing schemes or other types of cybercrime, malware distribution, rely upon a large number of domain names all registered by the same person. Now, as I mentioned earlier, criminals don't often provide painstakingly accurate information, but if you read almost any cybersecurity researchers' blog post about how malware distributors were uncovered, it relies oftentimes on a whois entry that contained some information that led to more information that eventually helped track down who was behind it. That is going to be nearly impossible to do now, and I think that's why not only cybersecurity researchers but law enforcement are very concerned about this development. My hunch is law enforcement will kind of get priority treatment when it comes to governments, if you're talking about country code domains or registrars, but there's no way to guarantee that, and there's also no way to guarantee that registrars will be able to deal with what I can only imagine is going to be a deluge of letters and requests for information from third parties.
And so it would seem, I want to ask another question after this, but when it would seem that the registrars who have never been big fans of the current whois regime may actually hate the new whois regime because they're going to get all these letters and inquiries.
I think that's right. There's a little bit of be careful what you wish for here. I think, right, registrars never really liked having to keep data updated and collect all this information in the first place, but now it seems like they're going to be, at least some of them who don't have big abuse departments, will be underwater with requests from lawyers, from cybersecurity folks, from law enforcement, seeking to unmask what will be redacted data now.
And we're going to take a short break. When we come back, though, there's really the question of what does the EU think about this dumpster fire, or are they perfectly comfortable with it? We'll talk about that when we get back after these messages. You're listening to Cyber Law and Business Report only on webmasterradio.fm.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
Do you look at the task of ranking your site at the top of the search engines like you would climbing the top of Mount Everest? It doesn't have to be. TopSEOs.com knows how hard that climb can be, and they can make top ranking a reality. TopSEOs sends you to only the right search vendors and agencies that they know will work for you. Since 2002, TopSEOs.com has reviewed and researched the best search engine marketing agencies and solutions providers. Don't risk the cost of falling off the proverbial peak of search rankings. Let TopSEOs give you peace of mind. TopSEOs.com, the independent authority on search vendors.
Hello, I'm Hector Elizondo, and I want to talk to you about getting older. My body hurts, my joints ache, and sometimes I forget.
I forget that doing all your own scenes for a movie isn't always the best decision, especially when you're galloping high speed on a horse named Archibello. So yes, my body hurts, but it's not because of my age. It's because I'm living my life.
Don't let life pass you by. Take care of your brain health. It may just help you stay on top of your game.
Oh, Archibello!
Learn more at brainhealth.gov.
Webmasterradio.fm. Take your hat off, kick your feet up, and log into the feed. We're here for you 24/7.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on webmasterradio.fm.
And we're back, and we're talking with Tyler Mirandola about the current situation with who is and with the onset of the EU's GDPR going into effect on May 25th. And we were talking about some of the repercussions of having a very privacy-centric who is system, and what that could mean in terms of lawsuits, in terms of inability to address cybersecurity threats. And what does the EU say? Is that just collateral damage?
So I think there is a bit of history here in that I think a number of data protection folks in the EU feel like Whois has been flaunting data privacy rules for a little while. That this is, I think GDPR is typically thought of as a backlash against the kind of data breaches, data sharing that we see all throughout the news. It is, of course, not explicitly a response to Whois, but there is a bit of this of a sense, as far as I can tell, that companies and organizations like ICANN have had time to comply and have really shown no interest in doing so until big fines were on the table. And so at least in the public pronouncements, there has not been much sympathy for what is, I think, a very complicated situation, even if there has been some acknowledgement that it's a complicated situation. Even in the most recent correspondence to ICANN in early April, the Article 29 Working Party somewhat confusingly both expressed some support for the accreditation model that ICANN was trying to develop, but at the same time said, you know, your function really is the coordinating the stable operation of the domain name system. Keep that in mind when you're thinking about the Whois system and how you're going to process data. So I think so far the EU has been pretty, at least publicly, not moved by what is going to be a very difficult situation for a lot of third-party stakeholders. It remains, of course, to be seen. There's a lot of discretion in the enforcement of this law, and there's a lot of ability to tailor either enforcement actions or remedies to match what is viewed as the gravity of the offense. And so it remains to be seen whether individual data protection authorities who are charged with enforcement of this law will give some leniency to ICANN and to other organizations who are trying to comply, even recognizing that they're not going to do so before May 25.
You know, I'm surprised to a certain extent. I would think, I often joke that GDPR is the EU's attempt at acting like Americans and making their laws apply extraterritorially. And because it applies to anyone who has EU European data of a European subject, which U.S. Congress, we often pass laws that have extraterritorial effect. But I'm surprised that the U.S. or no other nation has really stepped forward and said, hey, we disagree. We're going to require you to keep this data. And maybe that's going to be a reaction to post GDPR, whether there will be conflicting legislation by different nation states trying to define what the internet should do.
That's certainly possible. And in the U.S., I'm sure, and you can get a little bit of this in the flavor of the various U.S. government input into the GDPR WHOIS issue, is not super thrilled with having companies that are essentially U.S. companies with major international presence all of a sudden governed by a law that really, in practical effect, is going to affect their U.S. customers also. In some ways, I think a lot of people view that as good. Facebook got a lot of bad press, you might remember, when they initially said they were going to change their consent standards for Europe, but not for the United States. They've since backtracked on that and said that they'll apply the same data privacy policies to all their consumers. But you're right. It will be interesting to see whether individual governments try to legislate either around the GDPR or directly in contrary to GDPR in terms of the U.S. There are one of the justifications under GDPR for processing data is when the processing is in the public interest. And one of the things that GDPR explicitly allows is for governments to pass laws that define what public interests are. And so it might remains to be seen whether ICANN or other entities who have an interest, law enforcement, intellectual property holders, will be able to successfully lobby governments to mitigate some of what the effect is going to be of a essentially non-public WHOIS.
Now, we only have a few minutes left. ICANN is meeting in Panama City in Panama, which is a great city if you've never been, in the end of June. What do you expect to come out of there?
Well, I expect at that point there will hopefully be some major progress on what will be an actual accreditation model. I know that speaking to my colleagues here, there is a big concern, and I think one of the practical tips that I kind of give folks who maybe aren't as cued into this issue is, to the extent you have, you know, IP enforcement or other types of activities that require WHOIS searches, do them now. Certain registries are going to be taking down the public WHOIS information as early as next week. I guess the 25th is the end of next week, but as early as early next week. And so to the extent you can get those searches in, do them now. And because it remains unclear when we're actually going to have a true accreditation model that might provide access to bulk WHOIS data, or if we ever will have it. Hopefully we'll get some clarity on that in Panama.
Now, there's something you don't hear often. We're getting clarity right in Panama. But if people want to learn more about you, Tyler, and your firm's practice, where should they go?
Sure. So I'm we have our website, BallardSpar.com. We also have a data privacy group that runs a blog called Cyber Advisor. It's at CyberAdvisorBlog.com, where both me and a number of our members of our data privacy practice blog about everything from data breach laws, which are now in all 50 states in the United States, and other issues of data privacy.
And you have any upcoming appearances you want to plug? Or
I don't have anything on my schedule at the moment, actually. Okay. Will you be up at INTA?
I will not be at INTA, but actually I am flying today to Las Vegas to attend the Internet Law Leadership Summit, and a number of guests on this show will be there, and it's a great event. We'll get about 40 internet lawyers together in Vegas and hash out issues like these and have a good time as well. So I'm looking forward to joining my colleagues there. And I also want to give a shout out to a fellow host on this network, James Martell and Arlene Martell. They just had the 500th broadcast of their show, Affiliate Buzz. So congratulations to them. Next week, we will be having an interesting show. There's a growing push to get people with science backgrounds to run for Congress. And we're going to talk to one of them, Jess Phoenix, who's running up here in outside Los Angeles in what could be a pivotal race in terms of who retakes the House. Jess is a volcano scientist, and she's running a very spirited campaign. We're going to have her next week to talk about that race and the whole push for science and fact-based campaigns. But I want to thank Tyler for joining us. Tyler, it's been a great pleasure having you again. Tyler also was kind enough to speak to the California Bar IP section on this topic. So thanks again. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
All right. Well, join us next week. We'll have Jess Phoenix here. We'll be talking about the 2018 elections, and everyone else have a safe week. We'll be here right same time next week. This is Ben and Kelly with Cyber Law and Business Report. Have a great week.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.